And welcome to Where the Road Goes Midweek Podcast. Normally, I don't do introductions for these. I just let them go. But this one, I figured I wanted to do a couple quick things here. First of all, we had some connectivity issues on this interview. We're going to be talking with Tony Kaplan, who is a listener who has had a bunch of weird experiences. And we talked about some of them in the follow-up to the sleep paralysis show. But she had enough that we brought her on for her own show. So keep that in mind. I'm guessing this is her first radio interview. And we start this out with just Joshua, myself, and Red Pill. Mike Hughes joins about 10 minutes in. So he'll suddenly show up asking questions. But I cut out all of the parts where he came in just to make everything flow a little bit better. So that's why we don't introduce him at the beginning. He was a little late getting home. We waited a while and figured we'd just start and bring him in when he was ready. Now, when it comes to stories like these, where people have had repeated experiences, I've noticed on the Jeff Ritzman interview, people were suspicious because he had so many experiences. And coming and talking as someone who myself have had a good number of weird experiences, I don't think that's an unusual thing. The more you look, the more you find that these experiences are not solitary. It's actually weird if someone only has one experience, unless it's just seeing a light in the sky or something. Anyone who has any kind of intensive experience usually has other ones as well. It's like it opens up something, some kind of connection to something else. So to dismiss stories simply because, well, too much stuff happened to them, I think it's actually the opposite. I think if a lot of stuff has happened to you, it's probably because you're open to something, you're connected to something, and you're experiencing this more. Maybe you're noticing it more, it's noticing you more, however you want to look at it. But I don't think it's a reason to dismiss these stories. Tony's stories here are kind of different. It's some stuff I've never heard of before, and I found it rather fascinating. So with no further ado, here we go. This is our conversation with Tony Kaplan. All right, so we're here with Tony Kaplan, as well as Joshua Cutchin and Red Pill Junkie. And Tony, you had submitted some stories to us when we did our sleep paralysis show. And you said you've had some weird experiences all your life as well.
That is correct.
You want to tell people some of the earliest ones you remember?
Sure. Well, I grew up in the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania, in a little tiny small town called Freeland. And on my dad's dad's side of the family, it seems like at least one person per generation had different stuff they would know, have dreams, see spirits. And of course, you know, there's a large Irish population there, so there's a lot of folklore and everything. And just kind of grew up hearing family stories and, of course, going to the different scary places around town. I think everything really started for me in 1997 when I was 16 and my boyfriend killed himself. And everything kind of started for me that night. The night that he died, there was a really bad snowstorm and I couldn't go and see him. So he was calling and saying that he was going to do it, but there was really nothing I could do. I couldn't jump in a car and drive to go see him. He was living 2 hours away at that time. And he died at 10:30 at night, and they had came and got his body and everything. And that night I started getting phone calls from him. And we were young, so we both had jobs so we could pay the phone bills and stuff so we could talk to each other. So when, you know, I knew that he was calling and, you know, I was telling him I can't go up there. And it went on through the night. At that point, I didn't know that he had passed away. Oh, wow. I didn't actually know. He killed himself on December 27th. I didn't find out until New Year's Eve. So many days had gone by. And I got a bunch of phone calls that night, and his mom showed me the phone records when they got the bill, just saying, you know, like, this is weird. These phone calls went out, and, you know, it says that you guys talked for 5 minutes here, 2 minutes here, and she was actually going to call the phone company because they couldn't have been actual phone calls. And I told her, yeah, he was calling me. So that was my real first experience with...
That's one hell of a first experience.
Yeah, I'll say. Yeah.
But after that, I never got any phone calls or anything from him again. I did have a dream where it was a normal dream. And it was almost like little children came and got me. And they were like, come on, Jeff's waiting for you, come on. And took me in front of my dad's house where he was waiting on his bike, his little bicycle. And he told me, you know, what I did saved you. He's like, you're not going to understand. He's like, I have to go see my mom now, you can't come. And he just rode away. And as far as he goes, that's the last time I ever had any encounters with him. But that's when other things started. Right after that was my first sleep paralysis experience. And I always felt like it was an old hag. I was laying on my stomach and I felt almost like knees underneath my shoulder blades and I couldn't get up. It felt like it was holding me down. And I had never heard of sleep paralysis or anything like that before and was scared to death. But at the same time, I kind of knew that it wasn't Jeff. It was something completely different.
That's really interesting because I know that there are examples in the literature and examples that people have had of having sleep paralysis when they're on their stomachs, but it's not all that common. It's one of the lesser common positions that I hear of people getting into sleep paralysis. So that really is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's usually on the back.
Yeah, usually people are sleeping on their back and they have it on their chest. So that's really fascinating.
And I'm pretty sure that was the only time that I ever had sleep paralysis where I was on my stomach. But I know that go ahead.
What did you think of it at the time? What did you think it was?
You know, I just had that feeling like it was an old lady. And I ran downstairs and called my friends and I'm like, come and get me. We're going for coffee.
Did you know about the old hag syndrome
at the time? No.
What happened after the old hag experience?
After that, me and my mom, we moved into a new apartment, and it was a huge apartment. It was in an old boarding house, and my mom actually got my best friend's boyfriend's parents the apartment next door, which was great, because my best friend was always over there and would always hang out, and I was terrified to sleep in my bed. I would see eyes underneath the bed. It was like I could see through the pillow, through the mattress. It's like they were burning up. And my bed would shake, and I'd go in and I'd be like, Mom, I'm sleeping with you. And, you know, she was completely confused because I'm almost 18. Like, I have to sleep with you. Couldn't sleep in my own bed. And I would tell my best friend Jane, you know, about all the experiences that I was having. And she would tell me, no, you're just scared with everything that happened. And she ended up having the same thing happen to her where the bed over on her boyfriend's side of the house started shaking. And her mom passed away a couple months before this. And it was right around the time when the song Lightning Crashes came out, and she was really sensitive to that song. And me and a couple of my girlfriends were over in my room, and her boyfriend's room was right over on the other side of the wall. We're all sleeping, and she kept hearing lightning crashes being played through the wall. She's banging on the wall, telling us to stop it, and she was all mad at us, thinking that we were playing this song over and over again to make her upset. And we did not hear anything. And the walls are super thin. So whatever was radiating the music, only she was able to hear it. And she had an experience where she was in the bathroom there, and she heard someone come running down the hallway, and the bathroom door slammed. And that's when she was finally like, okay, something's wrong with this apartment. The whole building. And the
people, so was,
oh, go ahead.
Was this stuff focused around you, or were people having these experiences when you weren't around?
People were having them when I wasn't around. And the neighbors that lived below us, they said that they would often see, they called him the smoking man, just a guy kind of sitting on the radiator by the window, smoking a cigarette, like he was blowing the cigarette smoke out the window. And it just kind of had a lot of activity. I often thought, you know, there's a lot of mines under that area, the anthracite coal region, so I didn't know if there was a lot of water underneath there that, you know, just a lot of hollow areas that amplified things. But it was really active in that area.
Sounds it. Did, and so this stuff was happening prior to you moving there?
Yes.
Okay, and I don't remember if you, I know Mike joined us right about the time I asked you if you had heard of the whole old hag before you had your experience.
Right, and I hadn't. At that point, I didn't even know what sleep paralysis was.
Okay, so that was just the sense you got, that it was an old hag type of a woman.
Right.
Interesting.
Were there any other, were there any other sensory things that accompanied it? Was there a smell, or did you, was there a sound or something, or was it just the sensation of being pressed?
It was just the sensation of being pressed. It was just like somebody was kneeling on my back with their knees underneath my shoulder blades.
Interesting. Okay. Cool.
So at this time, did you reveal to your mother this sleep paralysis experience or something? I mean, I guess by then, I mean, your mom would have been asking out, why did, were you so freaked out about trying to sleep on your own bed?
Oh, yes. Yeah, my mom knew everything that was going on.
Okay.
I would tell her everything. I was very open about everything that was going on with anybody who would listen to me.
And what did she think?
You know, just being a mom, like, calm down, it's okay. You know,
but your eyes won't hurt you.
I don't think she really had much of an answer. I know at one point she did take me to Jim Thorpe, to the Emporium, to get my tarot cards read to try to figure some stuff out. And it pretty much said everything that was going on at that point in my life.
Did it help?
I think it just made me really upset, because I remember the lady telling me that I had been widowed in a sense, and just kind of going over everything and having a stranger tell you kind of is really emotional.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on a little bit.
Okay.
What happened? Yeah. Go
ahead.
No, I was just going to say, what kind of came next in your life?
Well, my first apartment that I was talking about earlier before we started taping, it was actually right next to the building that me and my mom had the apartment in. It's just, you know, was 17. I was like, I'm old enough to have my apartment. I'm moving out right next door. Mm-hmm. And I worked downstairs. There was a pet store and lived upstairs. And all of my friends were constantly just in my apartment. And that was... A lot of really weird stuff happened in that apartment. I would be at work. I would clean all the cages for the birds and everything. So I was by myself pretty much all day long, just thinking. And I started having thoughts that, like, I knew everything that I needed to know when I was born, but electricity and everything made me forget. So then I run upstairs to tell my friends, like, I know everything. I just forgot. They're like, like, we know everything too. And that ended up being really interesting because it seemed like we were able to will things to happen. I know that sounds really strange, but we'd be like, oh, we want pizza. It's like, okay, we have to believe that we will get pizza. And we had this thought that if we had any doubt, it spread, but you had to just keep believing and you had to, like, help each other not have any doubt. And then my granny would show up with, like, 3 boxes of pizza. So.
Nice.
So that was kind of the interesting good part of that apartment. On the other hand, a lot of really scary stuff happened there, and our whole thing where we thought we knew everything really only lasted about 2 weeks. The doubt set in.
Right.
That's where I had the dream. That was the first time that I saw the entity in my dream that I have seen ever since. Where it just looked like somebody I was having a conversation with, and I was sitting across a table from it, and I asked it a question, and I have no idea what the question was, but I just remember screaming bloody murder and waking up screaming and having scratch welts on my back. I went and asked my roommate, like, what's wrong with my back? It kind of felt like there was icy hot on it, and they told me, their scratches, and called my dad, told him to come pick me up.
How long did the scratches last?
Oh, probably a few hours. Not too long.
And how many were there? Was it 2, 3?
I think that there was 3.
Okay. That sounds typical. Yeah.
Mike, when you had the handprint, did you feel anything?
No, that was the odd thing about it. I mean, I didn't feel it, but it, like I said, it, you know, it looked like someone had painted it on my chest. It was so red and vivid. I have had scratches on my back before that I woke up with, so unrelated to that particular incident.
Were you talking to someone in your dreams too?
God, you know, I don't remember. I just I remember, you know, my girlfriend pointing it out to me and going, man, you got scratches all over your back. How did that happen? I had no idea. You know, it wasn't, unlike the handprint, it wasn't related to any particular, you know, dream or sleep paralysis or anything like that.
So, Tony, what impression did you get from this entity?
It's just every time that I saw it, it seemed like everything was normal. Until your eyes locked with it. And it really felt like it was looking into my soul. Like I was very vulnerable and it was just pure evil.
What did it look like?
It is shown up as different people at different times. It showed up as my aunt once in a dream. And it has known stuff. It knew about my sister who died 13 years before I was born. She died when she was born, actually. And it knew how old she would have been when I was born. It's just a very strong presence.
Okay. And you've seen this ever since?
Yes.
Well, it's interesting to me that it always is... It has the ability to look differently, but it always sort of has that same mouthfeel, as you will, that really lets you acknowledge it as being the same entity. I found that really interesting, because that really does resonate with a lot of spirit work that you see in a lot of other literature. That, you know, even though the mask changes, the thing behind the mask remains constant.
Yeah, they're all saying that the eyes are the window to the soul and all of that.
And we all know about the whole gray eye thing, plus the red-eyed monster. So eyes seem to play into a lot of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right, go on, Tony.
In that first apartment, that was the first time that I ever had a dream about somebody dying.
Oh.
And in this dream, it was our friend Travis, who I didn't particularly get along with too well. And in the dream, I was walking home down a dirt road. There's a lot of dirt roads up in that part of Pennsylvania. And he came running up behind me, and he's like, "Hey, wait up." And he was telling me that he was sorry for the way he treated me, and that his one friend was going to need me, and that I shouldn't, that I should make sure that I'm there for him. And I woke up, and I went in, and I told my roommate, I was like, "Your cousin Travis died." And it wasn't 10 minutes later that he got a phone call from his mom saying that he died.
Wow.
Hmm.
And with most other people in my family who have the dreams about people dying, usually they're about 2 weeks out. For me, they've been a little bit closer, either right before or right after they pass away.
And it's only people on your dad's side of the family that's had this, right?
Correct.
I don't know if we asked you that on or off recording.
Well, that of course keeps with a lot of lore about death harbingers in general, how they'll be tied to a family, like the banshee will follow a family member, or sometimes even romanticized in something like the Hound of the Baskervilles, where it was this one family that it was attached to. So that's interesting that it's just with that, just stuck to that one family.
Hmm. Okay, proceed.
This was. When I was living there, this was also the first time where, and this is another thing that happens to me. I will close my eyes, and it's almost like a projection on my eyelid of somebody doing normal everyday tasks, like a woman sweeping. And it'll almost be like she senses something's going on, and she'll turn and look at me. Almost like I'm seeing something that's not right there. I don't know if that makes sense.
Sort of.
Like, almost like if you're doing something, like you're typing on your computer and you feel kind of like something's going on and you look around, but you don't see anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like I'm on the opposite end of that. But I'm seeing it projected kind of onto my eyelids.
So are you actually asleep when this is happening?
No.
Okay. Does it pop up randomly? Did this happen a lot?
It used to happen a lot. It was very random. It was usually always when it was dark. So like if I'm getting ready to go to sleep or something and I close my eyes, that's when it would happen. Of course, my eyes actually needed to be closed, so just blinking wasn't long enough for it to take place.
Was it always the same scene that you saw?
It wasn't. It was always different people just doing everyday things, and it was almost like I was the entity that they were afraid of, that they would stop what they were doing and look towards me.
You were haunting them.
That's what it was like. It was a very, I don't know how to explain it. I've never heard anyone talk about this before. And I tried to research it, but for a while there, it really scared me because it was another one of those things where the people would almost look directly at me, and you would almost get the eye contact, which really did freak me out.
How long did these experiences usually last?
Usually it was a couple seconds, because the second it would start, I would open my eyes.
Right. Okay. I've never heard of that before. That is interesting.
It sounds to me, you know, like when people talk about, astral traveling or out-of-body experiences, and they show, I've heard stories like that where they, you know, your presence is felt by someone else. So that's the parallel I see in those particular experiences. Like your consciousness is disembodied and it just happens to wander somewhere, and the person feels it, and you know, is exactly like what you're saying.
Okay, and how long did that go on for?
It was really prominent when I was a teenager. A lot of things become more prominent when I go back to Pennsylvania. In Oklahoma, stuff isn't as strong.
And that's where you are now.
That's where I am at now. When I go back there, it seems to pick up. Seems like ever since my father passed away, stuff has really decreased.
Now, how far does your family's history go back in the Poconos?
Just to the early 1900s.
Okay, so not terribly long. Okay, interesting. No. Interesting.
What is your ascendancy? I mean, where does your family from your side of your father come from?
They come from Gorski, Poland. And my granny on my dad's side, they come from Ireland.
Okay. All right. What do you think? What would you say happened after that?
Well, right around that time is when I decided that I was going to join the Navy, and I gave up my apartment and I moved in with my best friend just for a couple weeks until I got ready to leave for boot camp. And when I was staying with her, I would sleep on the couch, and I saw three people floating outside of her window. And she lived in a trailer, so floating at the window, they had to be 12 feet tall in order to look in the window. And I rolled off the couch and on my elbows went into her bedroom and woke her up and was like, there are people. Meet me through the window.
You know what that reminds me of, Soraya? Sorry, I was just going to interject the anecdote that Jeff Ritzman just told about the head that walked by his second story window.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's right.
Sorry, I just want to interject. Sorry about that.
Oh, no, that's okay.
Did you think it was something unusual at the time, or did you think there were actual people out there?
Oh, no, I knew it was unusual.
Okay.
Because just the way they were looking in at me, it wasn't like someone would be outside your window like, hey, what are you doing, you know, open the door. Right. It was like they were looking right at me, just not doing anything, just very still. But after that, that's when I went into the Navy and was over in Atsugi, Japan, in Barracks 985. And that's when I had the sleep paralysis experience that I had wrote in about.
Yeah, do you want to tell people what that is? What happened?
Sure. Well, the room that me and my roommate were in was actually given up by two guys because they didn't want to live in that room. They said so much weird stuff happened. And before that night, it was always annoying things. You had to have a calling card to call the United States, so you would have it in front of you. You'd be waiting until a time when you could call and not wake everybody up. And you'd go to call, and you'd be like, I just have that right in my hand. It's gone. Moving furniture. We had bought one of those big Tupperware kits that had, like, 45 pieces, and we went to go get a piece of Tupperware, and all of it was gone. Like, someone came and raided all of our Tupperware, which was really odd. But it was always stuff like that where stuff would just end up completely missing, like it was falling into a black hole.
Did you think there were people responsible, or did you realize something weird was happening?
We realized something weird was happening because we would be in the room, like with the calling cards, it would happen all the time. And, you know, they weren't cheap. And you'd have it right there, or your room key card, and there would be nobody else in the room, and you didn't go anywhere, so, where did it go?
Right.
And we actually went down and asked the guys, you know, did anything weird ever happen in that room? And they're like, actually, we volunteered to move out. Nice.
So it clearly wasn't following you.
No, not this. And other people were having instances with it as well in the barracks. And what happened with me is actually very mild compared to what happened to other people. But with me, I had watch in the morning. So I was across the hall in my friend's room, and they were going to order a pizza and watch a movie. But I decided that I was going to go to sleep. So I went over across the hall into my barracks room, and a lot of times if we were going to go to laundry or go get a snack, we had a chain like they have at hotels. We would just put the chain in the door so we could go in and out. But my roommate, she wasn't there that night, and I closed the door and went to sleep. Probably about a half an hour later, I woke up. And in the corner, there was a guy standing there. And he looked so normal. Just like a Navy guy. Just like a hat, a white plain t-shirt, blue pants, boots. And he was standing there with his hands clasped in front of his body. And I went to rip the blanket off me because I was in fight mode, and because I really thought that it was a drunk guy that came in. I thought, you know, in the couple seconds that I had, that I was awake, I was like, obviously my roommate came back, she left a chain in the door, and a drunk guy came in and is watching me sleep. So I started yelling and ripping the blanket off, and it was like all of my energy drained out of me. And I fell back asleep, and I was probably only asleep a couple seconds, and I woke back up, and my blanket was halfway down where I ripped it off to, and he's still standing there, and I again start ripping it off, and each time it happened, it was like a battery going down, where all of my energy was just drained, and he would kind of fade from view. And it happened numerous times, and finally, the last time I got up, instead of just trying to rip the blanket off really quick, I laid there for a minute, like, you need to get up, you need to get up, you need to get up, and I, like, all of my willpower, it was, like, so slow, and the blankets were so heavy, it felt like they weighed 100 pounds, like they had lead in them. Got the blankets off, got out of bed, and it seemed like it took forever. Grabbed my purse, ran out the door. And then I'm in the hallway in my pajamas crying, and I'm like, I cannot go and tell any of my friends that I just saw a ghost, because they will so make fun of me. And so I just sat there for a minute. And another thing was, while this was all going on, there was people in the hallway carrying on. I heard the pizza being delivered across the hall. So I heard everything that was going on outside in the hallway. So I know that I wasn't sleeping at that point.
Right.
But I went back in and I just kind of yelled at it, like, listen, I'm in the military. They gave me a barracks room. Can't exactly tell them that I'm moving. They're going to have to deal with me. Leave me alone. And nothing ever happened with me again.
Huh. What about your roommates?
I don't think anything ever really happened with her so much, other than just stuff being missing, just annoying stuff, nothing terrifying. We did have my one buddy Josh. He lived down at the end of the hallway from us. He woke up and saw a face hovering over his, and he thought it was his roommate messing with him. And he started to get up because he was going to, you know, punch him or whatever. And he realized that it wasn't his roommate. And it was just like an entity hovering over him, inches away from his face, just looking at him. And another guy, he was woken up, went after it, and he was actually picked up and thrown into his refrigerator. So people were really, really terrified of this entity. There was, I lived on the third floor. My squadron was in the third and fourth floor. The first and second floor was a different squadron. But even down on the first floor, there was a girl who thought somebody had crawled in through her window, and she picked up a bowl that she had and threw it at it, and it went right through him. So it was numerous people who had seen that entity.
So the whole area there was just kind of screwy.
Yes.
Interesting.
Did you guys ever talk about it, or, you know, think about researching what this thing could be or who it could be or if there was a history at this barracks or anything like that?
We talked about it a lot. It was said, rumors were it was a guy who died in a car accident. There's no way for us to really know if that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But it really looked like very modern.
Mm-hmm.
The clothing wasn't dated or anything at all. Which I think is what really threw everybody off.
Oh, yeah, because you expect ghosts to be old.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Did you ever discuss it with one of your superiors?
Well, not really. The people go in and out of there so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I discussed it with a lot of people. A lot of us would sit around and talk about different little things that happened to them. And I think it was well known, even with the superiors. But I think it's also one of those things where, you know, they're in different housing. They don't have that going on. They just kind of see us, and we're all, you know, 18, 19 years old, and they're like, kids. We have more important things to worry about.
Yeah.
But also, the base at Sugi does have a lot of ghost stories. And when you go through, like, base introduction, they take you around and they tell you the different stories. There's a haunted tree on the flight line, the corrosion hangars supposedly haunted, and there's a lot of ghosts in their culture. They never said anything about our barracks. Like, none of us would want to stay there.
Huh. Okay. So after that, what was the next thing?
Well, when I got out of the Navy, that's when I moved in with my granny in Midlothian, Virginia. And that's where a couple things happened there. That's where I was stuck in the dream with me, my granny, my brother, and my dad. And that one, do you want me to tell the story?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. That was right after I had moved in with her, and my brother was still living up in Pennsylvania with my dad. And he had come down for the weekend to stay with my granny and see me. And we had dinner, went to sleep, woke up. It was well past midnight. And I felt like, just really weird, like, oh, I need to go and tell granny. And I don't know what happened where at first I needed to go and talk to my granny. But the way my room was situated, you came in the door, and to the left there was a wall, and my bed was against the opposite wall in the middle of the room. So each time I would get out of bed, I would take the covers off, get off out of bed on the right-hand side, go around the bed, turn on the light, and go out the door into the hallway. Now, my granny's bedroom was right across the hallway from my room. And I would go in there, and I would tell her, you know, granny, something weird happened. And she was a real prim, proper lady. So she would get out of bed, put on her robe. She'd be picking her hair because, you know, she had to have perfect hair all the time. And I would be telling her about the first time. I don't remember why I went in there to tell her. Just like something weird happened. I need to go tell granny. But I would rub my big toe against the carpet, just moving my foot. And I would think, this feels really weird. Not like a carpet. And I would wake up in my bed. So I would take the covers off, get out of bed, walk around the bed, turn on my bedroom light, go in the granny's room, wake her up, start telling her, I just had the craziest dream. I had this dream that I was came in here and rubbed my foot on the carpet, and you know, she's doing the same thing, putting her robe on, picking her hair, and I would rub my big toe on the carpet and I'd be back in bed. And this kept happening. It probably happened about 10 times. So the last time I got out of bed, I go and I turn on the light, and I'm heading into my granny's room, and I think, you know, I'm going to go and wake up my brother. So I go in, and I'm like, John, wake up. And he gets up, and he's like, Tony, are you there this time? And I'm like, yeah. And he told me that he kept having a dream that he was in my dad's basement. You go down the stairs, and there was a little game area with a couch and a rocking chair. He said that he was sitting in the rocking chair and that my dad would come down to the bottom stairs and be standing there and call his name. And he would go to respond to him like, Dad, I'm right here. But I would wake him up right before he had the chance to do that. And I'd be telling him my story, but he would get so tired he'd fall back asleep and be back in the basement. So we were like, okay, this is really scary. Let's go in the living room so you don't fall back asleep and so that I don't end up back in bed. So by this time, the sun was starting to come up. My granny hears us up. She comes out into the living room, and she's like, why did you keep trying to wake me up? I kept hearing you calling my name, and I kept opening my eyes, and you weren't there. And she really thought that we were messing around with her. I'm like, no, and I was telling her what happened. My brother was telling her what happened. And, you know, she was just like, yeah, yeah, let's, I'll make you some breakfast, you know, kind of just brushed it off. And then a couple hours later, my dad called asking my granny if my brother had drove back up to Pennsylvania because he thought he heard him in the basement the night before, that he went down to the bottom stairs and was calling his name. But he didn't know if, you know, he just went in there to grab something and then went back out. And so it just kind of made everything connect. And we have no idea what it was about.
Yeah, that is really weird. I mean, it's one thing to share a dream with one person, but you had a whole family shared dream in a sense. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've ever heard of that before.
Yeah, that's a new one for me.
And that's the only time that ever happened, right?
Yes, that's the only time that ever happened.
Huh. Do you think you were actually awake, or do you think you were dreaming until you went to see your brother?
You know, it felt each time like I was awake. Hmm. I don't know.
Maybe you were caught in a time loop.
And that's what I think. I've referred to it as that in the past.
That's understandable.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. All right. What would be the next thing that happened to you that you think of?
That's also where I had the dream where with my aunt, where I was over at my neighbor's house and I borrowed the waffle iron and my aunt came over asking for the waffle iron. And this, of course, was all in a dream, and my dream, I'm arguing with her, telling her, like, you wouldn't want the waffle iron if we weren't making waffles. And she tripped me from behind with her leg and, like, on my chest with her arm. And she had on high heels, and one side of her heel was on one side of my throat, and, like, the shoe part was on the other side. Mm. And she looked down at me, and that's when it was that entity that has come to me in dreams before, where it, like, looked into my eyes and it felt like it was looking into my soul. And it said to me, how old would your sister have been when you were born? 13 years old. And, you know, I was immediately awake, waking up my granny, like, she's getting out photo albums, looking for newspaper clippings so we could figure out how old she would have been when I was born. And the entity in my dream was right. She would have been 13 years old when I was born.
Hmm. Okay.
There was also an incident at my granny's house with an anniversary clock that didn't work for years. That it was a very weird night. My best friend had come down to visit me, and we were hanging out, and the TV had turned on, and it was like the religious channel, but my granny watched that all the time, and the volume was up ridiculously high. So we got scared, and we're like, well, let's run back into the bedroom and get my camera. And that was just like a normal camera back then. It wasn't digital right, or anything. And we ran into my room, and my granny had an anniversary clock that had never worked as long as I'd been alive. And I stopped in my tracks. I looked at it, and it was just going back and forth, doing that click, click, click. And I turned around, ran over my best friend. She's like, what is wrong? And I was like, that doesn't work. It has never worked. My granny has tried numerous times to get it fixed. It doesn't work. So we were out on the porch then, not going in the house.
Hmm. Okay. I guess move on to whatever came next.
Okay. I guess the next thing would kind of be with my my best friend and not me. But this is kind of how my husband put together that it might be the same entity that's visiting both her and me. Mm. I went with my family over to Italy on a family vacation. We went, of course, and toured the Vatican and all that. And got a phone card, called her from the hotel and was telling her about all the different stuff. And she told me that she had a dream that she was in a church that was the shape of a cross, and that there was red ropes, and that there was a line of people, and there was a statue that everyone was going to see. And she said that she got up to it, and it was her mom. The statue was her mom, like a carving. And she was yelling, "Mommy, Mommy!" And, you know, people behind her were pushing her because they wanted to see it. And she said that the statue lifted its head and looked into her eyes, and it wasn't her mom. And when she had this dream, would have been the same day that I was at the Vatican, which is kind of exactly the way she was describing it.
Wow. You have some very weird interconnections with people. Not to mention, I your experiences are somewhat unique. And I don't know if that's because people don't talk about them.
I don't know.
Which is entirely possible. Huh. All right. So this entity, you said your husband also encountered it?
No. He's just, you know, has over the years heard me and my best friend talking back and forth about our different experiences.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and he's the one that put two and two together. Like, I think that you guys are talking about the same entity. I think that it's messing with both of you.
Hmm. Now, this was your best friend?
Yes.
And how long had you known her?
Since I was about 12.
Okay. So before any weird stuff started happening?
Yes.
Any idea why it would have picked the two of you?
I guess, you know, we were always together, and you know, when stuff really started to become weird, when I was living with my mom in the apartment in Hazleton, Pennsylvania, and her boyfriend's parents had the apartment on the opposite side of the wall from us, it may have, you know, been the same entity and just kind of attached to both of us, maybe.
Okay. What do you think it is?
I think that it's evil. I think whatever it is, I think that it could, like, see my soul. It's... Hmm.
Is that why you think it's evil?
I think it's just terrifying when it catches your gaze and it's, like, hollow. But it's like it could see everything about you.
Like, it leaves you feeling very vulnerable.
Yes. Hmm. And I mean, other than the time where it had talked about my sister who passed away, it never did anything bad other than catch that gaze. So it never really hurt me.
Right. It just frightened you.
Well, I actually take that back. Because I do have another story about it where I don't know. And it was actually right after I moved out of my grandmother's house. I moved into Richmond onto Hanover Street. And I had to get up early in the mornings and go to work. But my brother and his girlfriend and all of our friends, they would hang out downstairs and watch TV and everything pretty much all night long. And I always slept with my cell phone in the bed because that was my alarm clock. And my dog, she would always sleep in the bed with me. And in my dream, I was walking down through the woods to a river. And there was a little girl standing looking at the river, and she was crying. And I was like, you know, what are you crying about? And she was kind of sobbing. And she said, I looked up and saw a gate. I started to laugh and it disappeared. I'm like, well, what does that mean? You know, are you lost? And she turned around and she looked at me and it was those eyes again. And she grabbed me and I heard her laughter. And it was just terrifying. And I woke up and I was ripping my dog's hair out and my dog was crying and I was just kind of screaming like, get out of me, get out of me. And I picked up my phone and I was like, I speed dialed my brother and him and his girlfriend are downstairs like, why is she calling us? She's right up the stairs, da da da, you know. And I'm like, please come up here, please. And I couldn't even talk to them. They didn't even answer the phone. They were just making fun of me for calling them.
Right.
But like finally I was able to willpower it and it went away. But yeah, that time I felt like it was controlling me. But that was the only time that it ever controlled me.
All right. Any thoughts, guys?
So I have a question. How has this affected your relationships? I mean, have you ever had anybody who do most of your loved ones and close people to you believe that you've had these experiences, or do they sort of are they sort of a bit hesitant to engage with these ideas, or what?
I think my husband knows that I've had these, and he's actually been there for a lot of the different stuff that happened after me and him got together. Everyone who's really close with me believes me. I have some friends that are like, yeah, right, I don't believe in that. That's not what it is. There's an explanation.
Yeah, they've made up their minds to not believe in it, yeah.
Right. But, you know, when it comes to them, I just don't talk to them about it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What about seeking help from, I don't know, I mean, a priest, an exorcist, a shaman, witch doctor, or whatever?
I think that now everything has calmed down a lot. My father, he passed away 3 years ago, and since then, I've really only had like some intuition, some dreams about people who passed away, but no, nothing intense. So I think that maybe he's kind of watching out for me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Or somehow he was also connecting you to some of this stuff.
Maybe.
However, unintentionally.
Mm-hmm.
But in his life, he didn't really have too much go on. He would tell me about when he was little, he remembered flying when he was really little. And he told me about him and his friends going into the woods with their BB guns because they were going to, they were really brave and they were going to go and get the banshees. But, he really believed, like, when you hear him tell the story, that there were banshees in the woods. But it's also the same part of the woods where my brother had some experiences. But other than that and the dream, nothing really happened with my dad so much.
It's interesting that they were hunting banshees, and as Josh mentioned, you know, you have the connection where you're dreaming the deaths being kind of like a banshee thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think with the Irish heritage there, they may have just been calling it a banshee. Because right. My brother, he has stories of being down in this one area in the woods with his friends, and where they heard something calling their names, and they knew that it wasn't it sounded like their friend's mother, and they knew that it wasn't their friend's mother because there's no way she'd be way out in the woods. So they started to run to the house, and they heard it following them, and came in, went downstairs, hid in the basement, and they said that they heard the door open, heard the door shut, and heard something go upstairs, but there was nothing there. When my dad would tell the story about him and the banshees, it was in the same part of the woods. You know, like, the same kind of thing, where, you know, something chased them, and they were going to go back, and they were going to be really brave and take their BB guns, and they were going to kill it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it may have been the same thing that my dad and his friends and my brother and his friends encountered just 40 years apart.
Yeah, something in that area of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's creepy.
I had a question. Do you think... Did you ever feel like there was some way you could have, like, opened yourself up to this entity? Like, anything you did or anything you and your friends did or anything like that? Or...
I think so. I think that after my boyfriend had killed himself, when I was so young, I was only 16 years old, I wanted him so bad to come and visit me. I think that it, and, you know, of course, my best friend was there, you know, telling her, like, I want him to come, I want him to see me, you know, one more time. I think that it, that may have had something to do with it.
Sure. Interesting. But you never felt like your boyfriend had anything to do with it, like his spirit or anything like that?
No. He came to me in that dream, and he said goodbye, and I know that that's the last time that he was around. That was probably about 2 weeks after he killed himself.
But before that, before you so wanting to see him and him to come back, I mean, had there been, had you felt any, you know, felt like you were psychic or anything as a kid, any odd things as a kid, or was that really a big trigger or a possible trigger, do you think?
Well, like my dad, I remembered kind of flying when I was a really little kid. And there were places where I would feel scared, like, for no reason. I always had really good intuition. Like, all my friends would go out drinking, and I'd be like, I'm not going. And they'd all get arrested. And I was the only one out of all of my friends who never got arrested. But,
wow.
Just stuff like that where I kind of knew to trust my intuition. But, yeah, before he passed away, there was never anything, no ghosts or anything like that.
Yeah. Interesting. It's interesting that the places you've moved to have been high activity, like the studio in Japan or the barracks in Japan. Was there anything else that happened to you that that you haven't talked about yet?
Well, when I was moving out of the row home on Hanover, where I had the dream about the little girl, my roommate, he wasn't home. The next day was when we were getting the moving trucks and everything, and my mom had moved to Richmond, and me and her were getting a little apartment. And she worked night shift at the hospital. I don't know where my roommate was. He already had all of his stuff packed up. And I was in his room, and I was mopping, glowing the floor. And if you went up the stairs to the second floor, on one side was the bathroom and my bedroom. On the other side was the office and his bedroom. So I was just squirting mop and glow, mopping, going in, into the bathroom, and rinsing it, the mop, going back in, squirting mop and glow, back and forth, just trying to get it done real quick. And turned around, went to go rinse out my mop, and all the boxes that were up against the wall were stacked in front of the bathroom door, and there was a lamp on the very top touching the ceiling.
Huh.
And I just kind of looked at it, and I was like, I don't want to leave either. I know you don't want me to leave. But I was there by myself, and it was at night, and I was like, okay. But I didn't feel scared.
Mm.
It was just kind of like, aw.
Your ghost didn't want you to go.
That's kind of how it felt like.
I have a question, Tony. What about, did you ever have any weird lights or anything like that? Like in your house or outside or?
I only did one time. And it was the place that me and my husband lived before we moved into the house we're in now. And it was right when we first moved in to there. And it was so odd. It was the first time that I had unpacked my crystals and he unpacked his crystals and we had all of our crystals together. So I always felt like the house was really charged at that point. Mm-hmm. And, from our bedroom, you could look straight down the hall into the living room, through the living room to the dining room. And the dining room was open to the kitchen, but you couldn't see the kitchen from our bedroom. So I was laying in bed and I saw this green mist kind of dance across the dining room towards the kitchen. And I felt compelled to follow it. So I got up, went into the kitchen, and one of the burners from the stove was on. So I don't know if it had turned it on or if it was telling me that it was on.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only time that I had ever seen any lights.
Okay.
Huh.
Do you...
Yeah, that's...
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead, sorry.
No, go on.
Oh, I was just going to ask, do you consider yourself religious, spiritual? Do you have any, you know, a particular religious affiliation or anything like that?
Well, I grew up Roman Catholic, but I consider myself more spiritual. I guess I kind of believe in energy.
Okay.
Right.
Did you feel that way before? I mean, have these experiences changed your kind of spiritual beliefs or anything? Or were they pretty much set?
I don't think that they have. I think that I had always kind of had my own thoughts about energy and vibrations, and it's really refreshing now with the internet to find out that a lot more people think that way too. But I think ever since I was in my early teens, I started to have those kind of thoughts and mm-hmm. go that way.
Mm-hmm. So the religion never took like a strong hold on you?
No.
Anything else happen that we haven't gotten to?
Let's see. Well, when I was still in Richmond, when I first met my husband, and he moved in with me and my mom into this little tiny apartment we had, I did have an experience where I woke up, and the only way I could explain this figure is like a Spanish king walking towards me with like a red cloak and a big chain and just coming right at me. And that was just a pretty quick experience. You know, the second that he was coming, it was like, oh my God. And then he was gone.
Hmm.
But that's the first experience I had where my husband was there for it.
Ah.
Shortly after that, we were camping on the Appalachian Trail in Hog Camp Gap. and
Hog Cap Gap.
Hog Camp Gap. Yes.
Wow.
And it's an old apple orchard, and you could go down to the ruins of the old farmhouse and stuff that used to be there. And the Appalachian Trail goes right through the orchard, and there's also like an offshoot path that goes down to a spring where you could go and fill up your water. And me and my friends, we would go out there and just, you know, pitch tents and hang out for the weekend. And I always had, I don't, kind of a fear there. Kind of a sadness, I'd say. So, I had my little hiking tent, and my husband had his little hiking tent, so I'm in my tent with my dog. He's in his tent with his dog. And it was like lightning went through my body. And I saw this image of a lady and black curly hair, kind of an olive complexion, wearing flannel shirt, you know, khaki pants, hiking boots, and she was pointing down towards where you would go to fill up your water, the spring, and she was just standing there pointing, kind of like at the edge of the trail, and I got up, and I was like, Seth, I'm sleeping with you. I'm not going down there. I don't know if someone is dead down there, if there's a dead body, but there's no way I'm going down there to find out. And it was pretty terrifying. After we got back, I remember being on the internet, just looking to see if anyone had, you know, been hiking in that area and vanished. Because I was, I don't know what I would do. Call and be like, I had a premonition of someone pointing down a hill.
But... yeah, that might be a little hard to explain.
But I guess even for my sake, just like, okay, what was this?
And you never found anything out about, like, anything happening?
No. Mm-mm. But I also never went back there. Which is a shame, because it's so pretty.
Despite the name.
Yes. All those places on the Appalachian Trail have interesting names.
Oh, I thought I heard Red Pill say something, but I guess not.
No, nothing.
Okay.
But that was right when we were moving to Oklahoma, when we went and stayed on the Appalachian Trail that time. When we got here, a lot of stuff happened, a lot of different stuff. Not like the stuff that happened on the East Coast at all. We first moved in with my husband's parents, and that was the first time that I had seen wake up and see fast-moving geometric clusters. And I would see them. I would wake up, and it would be like a cloud. It would almost look like a swarm of gnats. And it would be moving so quick, but always be in like perfect geometric patterns. And it would be like the second I would see it, it would take off so quick. And at his parents' house, that happened almost every day, where it was just kind of, I don't know, hanging out, but didn't like to be seen.
Did anyone else see it?
I don't think so.
It sounds similar to,
Terence McKenna's Machine Elves.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it does.
So I wonder if things set off a little extra DMT into your system.
I don't know, but the place that we moved into before we moved into the house we're at now, I would wake up and I would see mechanical spiders all the time. And it was weird because I only saw the mechanical spiders in that house.
That sounds clusters, a bit like the... go ahead.
I was just going to say that the clusters that I would see, I would only see them at my husband's parents' house.
I was going to say, the mechanical spiders sound a bit like the thing in Witchlights, Mike.
Oh, yeah.
I think Steve Stockton had a story in one of his books about something very similar to mechanical spiders being on, like, someone had woken up and gone downstairs and there were like little mechanical creatures crawling around the floor.
So I have another question, and I'm going to ask this, and I don't want you to think that, don't think it's going where it sounds like it's going, but have you ever had any odd experiences with any missing time or any sort of time dilation effects or anything like that?
I don't think so. The only time where... Not that I know of.
Okay, that's fine. I was just sort of wondering if you'd ever experienced that.
How many of these experiences do you think happened at, like, transitional points in your life?
Geez, it seems like my life is a big transition, so...
So most of them, then.
Yeah. But,
It does seem Weird Phenomena focuses around liminal states and points of transition and stuff, which is why I was asking.
But it's weird, because, you know, when my dad passed away, you would have thought that there would have been a spike then, and there was none. Like, everything just went gone.
And you think that's because maybe he has your back, sort of, so to speak?
I do.
Yeah.
And I don't really dream about him or anything. Mm-hmm. It's just everything just kind of calmed down.
Do you still have good instincts?
Oh, yes.
Just the weird activity calmed down.
Yes.
But, you know, looking at this idea of liminality, I mean, it doesn't seem like maybe... I mean, sometimes I think it's liminality that these things manifest around, but sometimes I also think it's just the non-structural lifestyle. And being a musician, that sort of lends itself to that as well. Just the idea of the creative self taking over and being more open to new ideas. So it sounds like your life has been interesting enough that it doesn't fall into the conformist sort of, you know, mold, which might make you in some ways more open to this, I think.
Maybe.
Why do you think this stuff has happened to you?
I really think that it runs in my family. My Aunt Diane, that's my dad's sister. She has dreams. She sees spirits. She has really good intuition about people going up to strangers, telling them, like, you need to stop what you're doing and we'll know exactly what they're doing. You know, because your girlfriend wants to marry you and she won't until you do this. And my great uncle Al, which would have been my dad's dad's brother, he also had the dreams, was able to see spirits. He was known for being able to find stuff. His neighbors would go to him if they couldn't find something and he would tell them exactly where to find it. So, and I had talked to my aunt 2 weeks ago in preparation for this, and she said that, you know, the family just thinks that some of us are a little more open to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's not everybody in the family, but it seems like everybody in the family has a little bit of something, maybe not wide open. But
yeah, that's a common thing. You know, people believe that these experiences are, you know, or are tend to occur in a lineage and are passed down. I know, you know, when I talked to my father about some of the stuff, you know, that had happened to me when I was a kid, you know, he opened up and told me stories, and actually one of them was about the floating disembodied head, you know, that we were discussing earlier. So, you know, I've always run into this with people. They say, yeah, this just kind of runs in my family, and it sounds like you're the prime example of that.
Yeah. And like I said, it's all on my dad's side of the family.
Mm-hmm. And that goes back to what we were talking about, I think, on the last midweek podcast, how you're seeing how, like, Jeff Ritzman's project there was showing certain nationalities more than others and stuff. So it could be something in genetics somewhere.
Yeah.
That makes us more, you know, susceptible to this.
Maybe.
Any other experiences that you want to share?
Well, the place that we had lived before we moved into this house, there was a lot of things that happened there. That's where I would see the mechanical spiders. That's where I had seen the green mist in the dining room. At that point, we were living with a roommate, and he was a bodybuilder and starting his own business, and he was always out running and doing all this stuff, and we'd come home all the time, and all the faucets would be on, and we'd be like, why did he leave the faucets on? And he would swear that it wasn't him. But also, you know, the stove was on, and I don't think that any of us left the stove on. It was a gas stove, so it was just really burning. At that house, I had what I called my Robin Hood gargoyle. I know that sounds weird. But I'd wake up, and I would see someone, and I'd be like, well, it's just the Robin Hood gargoyle. And he would either be kind of standing there, never looking at me, but like looking towards the door. There was a couple times when I woke up and I called him the gargoyle because he would be kind of perched in between me and my husband, our heads, kind of crouched down, staring straight out that door of our bedroom. And I was never afraid of him. It was just like, oh, he's just watching out. And then I would just fall right back asleep. But something really, really terrifying did happen there. And my husband, I was sleeping. I woke up. And he was kind of leaning over me. And his face looked like a Joker. I mean, his lips were like contorted in a way that I don't think they would have been able to be naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And he said over and over and over again for about an hour, you are the third of four. I cannot let you go. I must make you stay. And he kept saying it over and over and over again with this look on his face. And then he just rolled over, and I mean, the entire time I was so scared. I was like, I felt like if I move, like, is he going to hurt me? The second he rolled over, I was like, what is the matter with you? What are you doing? You know? And he had no recollection of it at all. We have no idea what the third of four means. Hmm. No idea.
All right. I don't even know what to make of that. Anyone else? I think you have everyone stumped.
But with him, you know, he was born in Texas, moved all over the West Coast, and ended up in Oklahoma with his family. And we found out that where my granny grew up in Philadelphia, his grandfather was running a jewelry store on the same block that she was working for the telephone company. His uncle worked down at Cape Canaveral for NASA with my Uncle Al, who is my, actually my great uncle. That's my dad's dad's brother. So there's all these, I don't know, connections almost.
Yeah.
Where it's a very small world, I guess. I don't know.
That's pretty weird.
Yeah. Like, you know, if these people didn't meet before, like, were they supposed to meet? We eventually met.
Yeah, obviously. And not through those connections.
No.
Well, you have an interesting life.
Yeah, I'll say, I mean, any one of these, you know, experiences you've talked about are, you know, if they had happened to a person, you know, would be fascinating enough. But the fact that you just have all of these things going on is really kind of astounding, you know. I mean, clearly something's working on in or on or, you know, behind the scenes in your life. I mean, do you feel special because of this? I mean, are you happy that these things are happening? I mean, aside from the, you know, the obviously the terrifying things, have you learned any, has it taught you anything?
You know, it's kind of one of those things, when it doesn't happen for a while, I'll be like, why isn't it happening? And, you know, I could almost, when I'm getting ready to fall asleep, kind of like shut out everything and kind of be able to hear like the background banter, you know, just to know that it's there.
Okay. Any other questions, guys?
Not so much a question as a comment. Thanks so much for coming on. I mean, it's been absolutely fascinating, and I echo all of Michael's sentiments. You know, it really does to me. It's another tick mark in the bin that's in favor for this being very individual centric. You know, the fact that people have encounters like this over the course of their lives really does suggest that what's important is the person. So that's just my two cents.
That's a great point.
Well, I thank you so much, Tony.
No, it's my pleasure.
Yeah, and, thanks, Tony. Really, really fascinating stuff, and really appreciate you sharing it all.
If you have anything else happen to you, feel free to get in touch with us.
Oh, definitely.
Maybe it'll pick up now that you've been talking about it.
Oh.